Welcome to The Geek in Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal profession. I'm Marlene Gebauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert. So Marlene, we had to skip last week because I was recovering from a bout of COVID. I did the wonderful conference COVID. But apparently, I mean, I talked to a number of people, and I was the only one that seemed to have caught it. So,
well, I got the conference cold, so I didn't get COVID though.
Yeah, I have a feeling I probably caught that. I caught the flu. I caught COVID. I caught everything.
You got it all taken care of in one shot.
I am super strong now. So,
Nothing can harm you.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. So, I understand you had some un-COVID travels yourself.
Yeah, that's true. I just got back from an advisory board meeting for the ILC for Wolters Kluwer. And if anyone doesn't know, I mean, that's basically a group of innovation and KM professionals. And we work quite closely with the Wolters Kluwer folks about feedback on products and, you know, where the industry is going. And so it's always a very insightful meeting, and this was no exception.
Yeah, I like it that a lot of the vendors are, you know, it used to be more, but there's still a number of vendors that have these advisory boards that, you know, actually reach out to their customers and say what's working, what isn't, here, test this.
It's really critical to sort of hear from your customers in terms of what's working, what's not, what their clients are saying, you know, in order to make smart decisions. So
yeah. Well, maybe we should suggest to law firms that we have a client advisory board. What do you think?
Yeah. As I think that's every day, isn't it? It's like we're on the advisory board every day trying to find out what they're thinking.
Yeah. Well, this week we have a fascinating conversation lined up for everyone with two of our favorite legal innovators who are at the forefront of exploring the impact of artificial intelligence on legal services and access to justice. So we have from Vanderbilt Law School, we're excited to welcome back our five, now six-time returning guest, Kat Moon, Director of Innovation Design at Vanderbilt's PAWLI, which is the Program on Law and Innovation. Kat, welcome back.
Hey, y'all. It is good to be here. And I'm sorry, I'm not wearing my tiara.
I know.
I'm in my office.
I love the pictures.
I'm so sorry. I'm in my office and my tiara is at home and I failed to get it. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I thought I would be jealous at work if you wore it. So you can't wear it at work.
I know. Next time, well, I promise. Yep. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Greg picked it out himself.
I did.
Well done.
I did have to explain to my wife, why are you buying a tiara?
Is there something I need to know?
That's fair.
Well, we also want to welcome Mark Williams. Mark is the Associate Director for Collections and Innovation at the Massey Law Library. Mark, you're only four more interviews away from getting your own tiara, if you so choose. So welcome to the Geek in Review.
I really look forward to that. Hopefully we can acquire one of those.
It's definitely a goal.
In the meantime, I appreciate, you know, giving me equal billing to Kat. We all know I'm just kind of drafting off of her popularity here, and I'm more than happy to do so. So
yeah. Well, I saw yesterday or sometime this week that King Charles was wearing his crown, so I can now envision what it would look like, Mark.
Yep. We could just do the smoking jacket for me.
Okay.
You know, like Saturday Night Live.
Nice. There we go.
Or both, really. Yep. I don't.
It's okay to mix and match. It's all right.
Yep. So, well, as if the two of you weren't wearing enough hats at Vanderbilt, you've recently launched the Vanderbilt AI Legal Lab, or VAIL. Vail is in Vail, Colorado, or piercing the corporate. So
actually, there were two people I looked up on the internet that have the same spelling. One is an actor and one is an author. So just letting you know. Yeah. So Vail is an innovation launched by Vanderbilt Law School to explore and understand how artificial intelligence intersects with and can transform the delivery of legal services and access to justice. It's housed within the school's program on law and innovation. Kat, would you mind telling us what the mission of VAIL is?
Yes. So, well, I will preface this by saying that the adage building a plane while you're flying it certainly applies here. But I really think we're like everyone else right now, that the mission really is primarily to go forth and see what we can build. We are framing kind of a formal mission statement. And right now it's somewhere around this. We have a human-centered mission to harness AI to expand access to legal services and legal knowledge. And I think primarily to focus on how we can improve the delivery of legal services through the use of AI. And for probably obvious reasons, we're pretty focused on generative AI right now and exploring and seeing how that's going to evolve. I think we're at this point in time that there is just so much potential and opportunity, and for us to really truly harness and make the most of it, we've just got to move fast. And I will not say move fast and break things, although we definitely are a scrappy startup, but you know, the really our entire mindset is how can we experiment and figure out how this can work, what the technology can do. So much opportunity.
And Kat, I had the pleasure of going out a couple of months ago and talking with your class that you and Mark teach on essentially generative AI and how it's playing a role in the education of the students as well as what the potential is for the market. And in fact, Mark, we were joking before we went on. So the three of us did this fantastic interview for the podcast, but somehow or another, we were doing it at a bar, and somehow or another, I did not press record.
Operative phrase. We were doing it at a bar.
Doing it at the bar.
And then it didn't get recorded.
They were unrelated, but it was a great conversation.
Nothing to do with one another.
It was a great conversation.
We sounded
tapes.
So smart.
We did.
In that conversation.
There's no way I'm going to be able to recapture that here.
Yeah. Oh, well. That was one of those things where, you know, as a Gen Xer, you know, it's like, just experience the moment. Just enjoy that it happened, right?
Absolutely.
Well, Mark, considering your role there as the associate director for the law library, do you mind just sharing a little bit about how Vail plans to leverage the library resources and the collections to foster the innovation for the program?
Right. Well, I think, and you both would know this, this is an extension of the work that law librarians have been doing forever. It's sort of a natural evolution into you know, being able to evaluate and sort of critically use these resources, and wanting to make the law library a place where, you know, people can try stuff out and experience and have the resources to do so, at least while you're in law school, in a somewhat of a risk-free environment. I forget, it was one of the co-founders of Casetext, I can't remember which one he was talking about, like the best compliments he had received on co-counsel was just that the law librarians kind of said, well, it was okay. Like it didn't suck.
Yeah. Yeah, we know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's so the model of my old home state of Oklahoma. It's okay.
Right. Yeah. And so I think, you know, that's a lot what we bring is our perspective and also our resources to just be able to critically evaluate these tools in the same way that we've been doing for ever in this different framework and be able to provide valuable feedback. Kat and I actually met with a startup of another generative AI legal company today and talking about sharing their beta product with our law librarians and also with our students. And we just want to be a place where groups like that feel like they can come and try stuff out and get feedback from us. So I think that's a huge opportunity for us and for our students to be able to have that sandbox environment to just, again, have adopt a mindset of continuous learning, what questions to ask, what workflows work, what don't, what models are you built on, you know, to critically evaluate things that usually have not been very sexy, but that law librarians have always cared about, but I think more people are going to start caring about, if that makes sense. I think that's the approach we can bring.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that's something that, like, in the 90s when we're getting into more web-based type of materials, that the law libraries at law schools were the proving grounds of a lot of these things. And it felt like the last 15 years, that's kind of fallen out a little bit. So I'm glad to see that seems to be coming back with the generative AI tools.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a good preparation step, because I can tell you, you know, in firms, people are clamoring for that type of education. You know, they really want more knowledge about how these things work, what they do, what things should they be concerned about. This is great for students that are kind of coming into the profession to sort of be armed with that information already.
Yeah, we really feel like there's been almost an inelastic demand and curiosity for learning about this, both from our students and from just professionals that we've talked to. And that's, you know, a big impetus for why the lab, we got the momentum to do it, is because of that, for sure.
So, Kat, you've mentioned in recent press releases the importance of cross-sector partnerships for extending the impact of AIL. Can you elaborate on what kind of partnerships you're aiming for to forge and how these collaborations might shape the lab's work?
Absolutely. And I'm to preface my response with respect to the lab specifically, I do want to point out it has been the kind of tradition and in part the reason for existence of the Program on Law and Innovation to figure out how we forge collaborations across what I call silos. I guess 4 or 5 years ago now, we started the Summit on Law and Innovation, SALI, and that was particularly aimed at creating opportunities for folks across these silos to come together and kind of cross-pollinate, right? Unfortunately, as with many things, COVID threw a wrench in that happening, but the lab, I think, is the next iteration with that. So the goal really is, how can we bring people, first of all, across disciplines? So we have an embarrassment of riches, frankly, here at Vanderbilt with respect to computer science and engineering, people doing really interesting work in the humanities with respect to AI, actually. Mark and I sat in on a fascinating conversation yesterday afternoon involving some folks from philosophy, from history, just doing some really interesting things. Not to mention just the folks in our building who've been doing interesting things with respect to AI for a long time. The opportunity to bring people across Vanderbilt into the legal ecosystem, but extending beyond that, our goal with the lab is to create collaborative opportunities with courts, with law firms, with legal aid organizations, with smaller providers, hopefully with alternative legal service providers. So we really are in this active sort of listening phase to understand who's interested in experimenting and collaborating on some projects. I can tell you we have already in the works a collaboration with Legal Aid of North Carolina's Innovation Lab. They're the first legal aid organization to have a dedicated lab with a director, a full staff, with some really lofty goals. And so we're going to be collaborating with them. We are talking to a number of law firms who are doing some interesting things to find kind of the right mix of opportunities to experiment and collaborate there. Same thing with some courts. And so we're just actively seeking out people who are curious and interested in trying some things and building some things. And so my hope is it's going to be a really compelling combination of how we can harness and bring together resources across Vanderbilt and then take those out into collaborative opportunities across the legal spectrum. We just want to build some stuff. We want to do, right? Like, enough talking. We just want to do.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm just curious, when either you reach out or these organizations reach out to you, whether they're alternative legal service providers, law firms, or legal aid, whoever it is, how do you pitch to them, here is the win for both of us? Here's what you can bring. Here's what we can bring. How do you pitch that? I know it's new. If I were to come to you from Jackson Walker and say, Kat, I really want to I want to leverage what we're doing with what you're doing, how do you sell me on that?
I think first it's by listening and understanding what you all would be interested in doing. And then I mean, I don't want to speak for Mark, so I'll let him chime in on this as well. But one thing we're actively focused on right now is creating that matrix for what is it that we have to offer institutionally and process-wise through the lab, and then kind of filtering through that the collaborative opportunities that come our way, right? So as I said, we are building the plane while flying it. And part of it is also just really getting a handle on what other folks are doing and where they are in their processes. So I'm coming at this, again, speaking only for myself, but I'm coming at this with a very much of a growth mindset. Like I know enough. I'm a humanist who dabbles in technology. That's a phrase that I definitely latched onto from this interesting conversation that Mark and I had with some other folks here on campus yesterday with respect to AI specifically. So I feel like every conversation we have, I learn something more about what the opportunities look like and what they are. And so I guess, because I always have to quote Mary Oliver, I'm definitely leaning into living in or being an open-mindedness of not knowing enough about anything, right? And so that certainly applies with respect to that. But so that we can have some productive collaborations, we are working towards having this matrix that can help us really identify. And so then it's a matter of, in terms of pitching, it's a matter of when we can fully understand what we bring to the table and understand as much as possible what the goals of another organization are, then it's like just looking at what does that Venn diagram look like, right? Where's the intersection? And does it make sense to try to do something? And I will stop rambling now and see if Mark has anything he'd like to add to that.
Especially with Kat, like her focus for years on human-centered design and that process, like that work continues with this. This is perfectly suited to that, because I think right now, like a lot of the demand we're seeing, the collaborations are things where we have to flesh out a little bit. It's exactly what the nature of designing those problems is going to be, what the use cases are, and that human-centered design process is like central to that. But there's also just right now such an insatiable curiosity for what the tools are and what the use cases are, that just that education component right now has been so important. And it's part of it, I think we talk about a lot too, is it's just we are still just defining what the questions are. Because as soon as you think you have the answers, like even you just saw OpenAI's Developer Day Monday, like you think you have the answers and then the questions change. So it just becomes just an ongoing sort of learning environment in that way. But yeah, I think that's the direction we're going, and just sort of equipping our students to help us out with that process as much as we can.
That's a really interesting point, because again, sort of building the airplane while flying. I mean, I know the mission includes training of students to sort of navigate the landscape. And so, you know, coursework is involved. And so there is a degree of prediction, I guess, in terms of what's going to be important and useful. And I'm really interested in this because, you know, we are struggling, you know, on the firm side in terms of how much education, what sort of education on Gen AI, given people are not, you know, most of the people that are attending this are not technologists, but yet they need to know a certain level of knowledge about that. So, you know, Mark, can you give us a glimpse into the kind of coursework and hands-on experience that students can expect from Vail? And how do you think that'll prepare them?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that we noticed and that allowed us to get off to a quick start is that we had already kind of had a suite of courses at Vanderbilt that fit into what we could have called a concentration even before we got started. We have some additive things that we want to expand on, but like a lot of what we had already offered and were doing at a school was already here. And it was just a matter of like being intentional about it. So Greg came to our AI and law practice course, and really like every week of that course, every unit, like eventually could be its own like semester long course. I feel like that was that sort of wide ranging. So that was kind of a 100 level survey course, but we have the ability right now just to run the gamut of having a very sort of what I call a I know how to drive the car pathway where they have, our students can have an understanding of very basic stuff, like just best prompting techniques, strategies, using the persona shot prompt, few shot prompting, like very nuts and bolts of this moment, how best to leverage a large language model, but then also understanding the underpinnings of the technology to avoid Avianca Schwartz brief situation and how easily avoidable that was with just a little bit of technology literacy. But then also, I think what Kat and I are big on too, and that her other courses through Poly that we can sort of already offer and think about through an AI lens, is if AI is going to be a part of our world and is automating some of these low-level tasks that used to take up our work, what then do we do with our time as attorneys? What are the high-value things that we do with our attorneys that now AI allows us to do? Because we're experts at AI and we're experts at law, how can we sort of use that to augment our practice and basically sort of turn that into an exoskeleton for your brain to basically have a superpower? So we're looking at it from both that sort of nuts and bolts of this moment version and then the other courses that I think we already have in place and will continue to add will be kind of a growth mindset. How do I continue to learn how to learn about this to leverage my already sort of high level of legal expertise? Another pathway that I'm hoping it's a little bit further off into the horizon, but something I hope we can accomplish is because of the collaborations we have at Vanderbilt with computer science to look into some interdisciplinary sort of what I would call the build the car pathway for people who have that legal perspective and background, but also may have an interest in training models and diving deeper into, you know, the ethics of data and algorithmic bias from more of a technical perspective. That is more far-reaching now. That is more aspirational than realistic in this current moment. But we certainly have those sort of practical underpinnings into the policy-oriented. We already have a lot of professors doing a lot of policy-oriented work here, too. So you can learn the basics of prompting, but then also sort of learn the law of AI, I think, is part of this concentration is how we envision it.
One of the things that I hear that keep coming up in discussion is training of associates. Like if like a lot of this type of work that AI might solve for us is to an extent things that people have interpreted that sort of you learn through doing on some of these things. And if they're not doing it, how are they going to be learning? So I'm curious if that is something that is a discussion that comes up.
I think that is a central question of the lab that we will, I don't necessarily have an answer for, but that certainly is what the driving force of creating the whole lab is about. And I think just looking to history can sometimes, it can't be completely, you know, this is still uncharted territory, but I think it's Ethan Mollick, who's a professor at Wharton, who does a lot of writing on sort of, he calls himself an AI pragmatist, is very much how I view myself too. Likening a lot of this to sort of the introduction of calculators in classrooms back in the 80s. It's not a one-to-one comparison, but there again was like a reevaluation of what are the entry points? At what level do you need to learn these skills? Do you need to like struggle with the blank page to learn how to write a draft versus when do you bring it in? When are you reached a proficiency level, or is this a writing task that is more ripe for automation that isn't worthy of this struggle of the blank page? I think that is definitely a core mission. I wish I had more answers for you, but if I had the answers for you, then we may not need a lab. So
yeah, I don't think anybody has a definitive answer on this yet. It's just something we're all kind of wrestling with, like when to, you know, allow, you know, associates to use it. Like, is there a certain level that they start? You know, there's just a lot of questions.
Yes, and so much of what we train our associates on is potentially what this does very well. So I do think we have to find out what is our runway for achieving that proficiency without wasting anybody's time, I guess.
Uh-huh. And if I can just chime in on this really quickly, this presents an opportunity that's been ripe for a long time for our legal education and firms to think a little bit more intentionally about maybe how we're working together to solve for this, right? So one thing I do in all my courses, and it's definitely imbued in the work we're doing in the lab, is empowering our students to really own their lifelong learning trajectory. So in many ways, I think it's a mistake to leave that up to a firm. And so that's one thing I want to empower my students to do, is to go forth and understand that ultimately it's on them to figure out how they're going to get what they need to be able to be excellent in their work. And there's so much opportunity, I think, for there to be a closer collaboration, so that law schools are thinking about what they need to do differently and modify and tweak and maybe introduce. It's and, not or. And what firms need can feedback into that, and what that loop looks like. So I would identify that as a clear project opportunity for the lab, right? To work with firms to help understand what can we be doing at the legal education level that's going to prepare associates better to really thrive and succeed once they get into the firm environment. And likewise, what do firms need to be prepared to do? Just an observation, anecdotal, that, you know, there's always work to be done to improve how associates are trained. And maybe this is the runway, the ramp, the reason for that to be approached a little bit differently. So.
Well, I mean, I know one area that would be great for collaboration, I mean, is sort of the security and client related data and privacy and confidentiality issues. Because again, I think that's another area where there seems to be a lot of question as to how that works. You know, what are the protections in place? How do they work in terms of people? Because there, you know, there's some hesitancy. It's like, am I allowed to do this? Am I not allowed to do that? So I think that would be an excellent opportunity.
Well, I'm going to either deviate from the flight path or shift down in our car that we're building. One of those analogies here. So Kat, as the director of innovation design at Poli, you are definitely no stranger to designing initiatives that kind of push the boundaries of legal education and practice. And you'd mentioned that one of the, and I think the reason for this is that this is finally a technology tool that can actually handle language. So you're seeing more of the humanities involved in it. So I want to ask about, you know, how do you envision the ethical applications of AI that's being pioneered there at Vail? And what role will ethics play in the lab's initiatives? How ingrained is ethics into the policies that you're teaching?
Well, I think it has to be a core feature, right? Really foundational for a couple of reasons. So, and to kind of center this on the premise that Vail's work is in the AI of law and not the law of AI. So there is a distinction there to be made. And in a lot of ways, that distinction isn't a realistic one, because it all kind of tends to sort of get mushed up together. But with respect to the ethics aspect, I mean, that is a core piece of everything we do with respect to the course that Mark and I are teaching, AI and Law Practice, and definitely with respect to the work we will embark upon through the lab. My hope is that we can think about it from an ethical perspective in myriad ways. So there's obviously, if we're focused on the AI of law, then we have to think about the ethical implications in just delivering legal services, right? And what all that entails. And, you know, we have some amazing professional responsibility faculty who are super interested in looking into these things with us. So again, kind of drawing on the embarrassment of riches that we have at Vanderbilt in the law school. And I think expanding that beyond, and this kind of goes into the law of AI, but again, I think making these distinctions at some point just becomes futile, going from that into really thinking much more deeply with respect to cultural and social implications. I think ultimately our goal is to prepare and empower our students to leverage these tools in an ethical way when they become practicing lawyers, but as maybe even more importantly, to have as deep understanding as possible so that they can actually help lead and shape how we as a society are going to make choices with respect to how this technology is implemented. Really, the stakes are much higher than how a law firm's going to leverage a technology platform, right? When we're talking about training lawyers. And so I think the opportunity is enormous, but I think ethics is just an integral part of every single aspect of this. And to refer to a point that Mark made earlier, like, we have a whole lot more questions than we have answers. Because I think as we watch the technology evolve and it do things that even the people who are making it don't understand, yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. But the ethics piece is foundational, right? It's like, it's got to be a core piece, really, of every part of this work.
And I'll just add on to that. I think even just right now, Kat alluded to some of our faculty already kind of working this area. Kara Saval, who runs our youth opportunity clinic here, but also does a lot of professional responsibility training. I actually did co-presentation with her for a legal aid group a couple months ago. And so we're already thinking deeply about, you know, the nuts and bolts of professional responsibility from an ethical space in terms of consent, confidentiality, competence, and how to avoid sort of, you know, the ChatGPT brief situation. But then also for me, like, I really nerd out about sort of the ethical implications of data, access to legal information, who gets to leverage that legal information to make products. Damien Real is the one who's, I think, talked about this a lot, where just he estimated what it would take, like $2 billion to extract everything you needed to out of Pacer to get the entire data set. You know, and the implications for, like, who gets to build legal products and who gets access to that information based off of that structure, that's a whole other ethical box that's, like, different from the sort of the nuts and bolts professional responsibility one. So, yeah, I think we are also, like, still figuring out what are the ethics of these tools when we don't even, you know, necessarily know where we're headed with them from week to week.
Yeah, and, like, whether they're open or closed models, I mean, there's a lot of question. So, Kat, Vail has plans to co-develop service delivery solutions with legal aid organizations, as well as law firms and legal departments. Could you share some insights into how those collaborations are expected to work and what impact you hope they'll have on access to justice?
We are launching through my legal problem solving course, which is my course in human-centered design that I've taught here since 2017. But we're going to launch at least three projects next semester, starting in January. So one of those projects is going to be with Legal Aid of North Carolina's Innovation Lab. So that's the legal aid component. Another set of projects is going to be with the Office of General Counsel here at Vanderbilt. So we are working with GCs as well as their Director of Legal Operations, Lizzie Shilliam, to identify some discrete projects that we're going to work on with them. And then we are in conversation with respect to what the law firm piece is going to be. So we aren't quite ready to announce that piece yet. I think the objective with respect to kind of this full spectrum of those projects is to employ the human-centered design method and certainly the mindsets to identify opportunities and then start designing and prototyping solutions, right? Our focus is going to be on specifically leveraging generative AI with respect to those solutions. And that's a little bit different than, I will say, than I normally approach in legal problem solving, because the objective always is to really get deep in the problem and the opportunity first. So you're not working backwards from a specific solution. You're working forward from, do we really understand what the problem is, what the challenge is, and how we can best address and solve that. However, in this instance, I believe that generative AI, in the direction it's going, because of now its capacity with respect to words and how that is what we do in law, actually is constituting, it is a solution to some things, right? Like, there are things it can do and is getting better at that will solve some problems for us. So in some ways, we're just trying to kind of meet in the middle. We have these challenges. We have technology that can do certain things, has capacity, capacity is improving with respect to other things it can do. So how can we match those things up? You know, our objective really is to try to build some things. What exactly that's going to look like is going to depend on a whole lot of factors. We have resources we can leverage here through capacity we have with budget and also resources, as I said, just embarrassment of riches on Vanderbilt's campus. We're working with groups who already are employing some resources as well. So ultimately what that looks like, but our hope is we're going to be able to point to a concrete thing that we have prototyped or are prototyping and say, here is a potential use case. Here is a potential solution that is going to help solve a problem for this organization and for the people in it.
I think the fun thing about that process too is just when all my favorite use cases with generative AI are the weird ones that I didn't expect. It's not the write me a legal research memo or find this case for me, I mean, heaven forbid, but it's all these sort of gray area nooks and crannies, creative processes that you really have to tease out by talking to people and what their workflows and needs are before you can really know. It's the creative side, the weirdness of some of this that really impresses me the most.
So Mark, Kat, we've come to the part of the podcast where we ask the crystal ball question, and Kat knows the drill very well. But Mark, this is your first time, so I'll let you go first. What challenges or changes do you see for Vail taking on over the next few years?
I think the challenge just as simply is, as far as I know, we're the first ones to try something exactly like this. And there is no roadmap. But that's the fun of it. It is, it's a lot of adventure. Again, like one of the things we did in our class, I only did it when I needed to, but I pretty much every week I would do is like, well, here's what's new this week that didn't exist the week before. And I feel like I didn't set out to do it every week, but pretty much every week I did. And I think that's going to be, as far as I could tell, going to be continuing with the way that we do this going forward. So, I mean, if you'd have told me this time last year that I was sitting here talking to you about launching an AI lab, I would have said, you know, you were the one hallucinating, not the lab, not the large language model. So I am not in the prediction game. Apologies, I kind of reject the premise.
we did say you can answer the question the way you wanted.
yeah. I know enough to know I shouldn't be predicting too much about where this might be headed.
Kat, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think I simply have absolutely no idea, Marlene. I have no idea. I do believe with every fiber of my being, and it's really the only reason why I'm still like walking this path after 25 years in the practice of law, that we have an enormous opportunity to really shift how we think about doing our work and really embracing some new mindsets that will serve us well going into the future. Well, I will say this. I've seen a series of articles that ask the question, you know, will AI continue to be a differentiator? And I think that that is completely the wrong approach. That is like a second industrial revolution question to ask. What is a differentiator is the mindset that allows you to be flexible and agile and change and adapt to change and deal with ambiguity. And so while I do believe this particular technology poses some unique opportunities in the law, we didn't really talk about the access to justice thing. So I'm just going to a brief plug. I think there is some really interesting opportunity there to create access to legal information to people who otherwise will never get the help from a lawyer, but putting that to the side. The real opportunity here is to teach law students and lawyers how to look at things a little bit differently and how that can serve them in all ways and not just in dealing with generative AI, right? That's the real opportunity. The lab will succeed if we are able to teach our students how to successfully experiment and make law better, and if that can have ripples that goes out into the greater legal ecosystem. And whether that happens with generative AI or something else, we don't know. This is just kind of the current experiment we're going to run. So otherwise, I have no idea what's going to happen.
What Kat said, as usual, I'm just drafting off of her.
We all points. Are. We all
yeah,
are.
I think regardless of the technology, if I do have a crystal ball prediction, it's that. It's that our students will come out of there with that mindset, which is more valuable than any technical training that of the moment that they can have.
Agreed.
Well, my idea to pitch to both of you is that somehow or another you create a Masters of Law program on this so that you can have an LLM on LLMs. So there we go.
Oh, I've thought about it. I think we may have even talked about it in my office. Yeah.
Yep. That is the golden opportunity, Greg. Yep. That right there.
Absolutely. Yep. Well, Kat Moon and Mark Williams of the brand new Vanderbilt AI Legal Lab, congrats on the launch of Vail.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If anyone wants to learn more about it, where's the best place for them to go?
Well, we don't have a website yet. We haven't built that part of the plane yet, but it'll be up soon. So I can't point you there. But folks are welcome to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a line directly via email. We'll share that info with you, Greg, Marlene, so y'all can post that in show notes if you like. Yeah, just reach out.
Yep.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks to both of you for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. Yes, absolutely.
And thanks to all of you listeners and subscribers for taking the time to listen to the Geek & Review podcast. If you enjoy the show, share it with a colleague. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on social media. I can be found primarily on LinkedIn. You can also reach out to me on X at GayBauerM and on Threads at MGayBauer66.
And I can be reached at LinkedIn on X at Glambert and GlambertPod on Threads. Mark and Kat, other than LinkedIn, I'll make sure that we just put your LinkedIn post out, or links out there. Is that okay?
I'm Inspired Kat on Twitter.
That's right.
I saw what you did there.
I've been coming out of my shell more on social media. I'm used to usually a lurker, but yeah, let's stick to LinkedIn. I think I'm just Mark Williams on LinkedIn.
And of course, the music you hear is from Jerry David DeSica. Thank you very much, Jerry.
All right. Thanks, Jerry. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.